Hello, I'm George Sainsbury and welcome to Dog in the Spotlight. This week we'll be looking at two dogs, the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and the King Charles Spaniel. We'll be joined again by Larry Cavello Phillips.
Hello.
Who is always on the hunt for that ideal dog. And we'll also be joined again by vet and friend Trevor Gertlock.
Hi George, hi Lowry.
And before then, we'll be doing Dog in the News. In this week's Dog in the News, we'll be looking at the top 10 most popular dog breeds in the United States. The list was released on May the 1st this year, and they are referring back to the 2019 most popular breeds. What do you think, Lowry and Trevor, are the most popular dog breeds? Now, before I go on, I did send them this article.
I was about to say, is this the article that you sent us and then told us not to read?
Do not read this article.
Yeah, I said, this will be Dog in the News, and I said, don't read it. Because this is Dog in the News. Because I was going to say, because usually we share our Dog in the News. And I thought, oh no, I want it to be a surprise. So have you read it firstly? I hope not.
No.
Good.
No.
Now, what do you think for the 29th year running, it's a record, is the most popular dog breed in the United States?
Oh.
I'm going to go with Labrador Retriever.
Oh,
it has
yes,
to be.
Yes, I was going to say that one.
Well done, Trevor. It is the Lab.
Nailed it.
So I've got the top 10 here. There's been a bit of change with some, but most of them stay the same. Which dogs do you think will be on there? Larry?
Bernedoodle.
Okay. They will have to, they're talking about pedigree dogs.
Oh, I yeah. see. Okay.
And the reason why she just said that, her friend's just got one.
Australian Sheepdog.
Okay.
I'm going to go with a Dachshund.
That's number 11, the Dachshund, okay. Actually.
Oh, okay. Beagle.
The Beagle is on there. The Beagle swapped places with the Poodle and to 7th position. It was 6th position. So I'll okay. go down and tell me if there's anyone you're like, wow, I'm surprised at that.
Okay.
So number 2, German Shepherd.
Oh, I am surprised. Okay. Is that because they're used so much in terms of the police capacity? And
I don't know. I think they're just a naturally quite a popular breed.
Yeah, I think
breed.
They're popular, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, do you see a lot of those in your practice, Trevor?
Absolutely, yep. Very popular breed.
Golden Retriever.
Yeah, that makes sense.
French Bulldog. Now, when
I feel like they
French
will be Bulldog. Number one soon.
Do you know what? When I was younger and I was dog obsessed and I used to research dog, French Bulldogs were so rare. And it's only been in the last 15 years they've really come about or like become the fourth most popular dog breed. I remember telling people a French Bulldog because I used to think, oh, they're really cute. And people are like, I've never heard of it. And Lowry's not a fan, are you, of a French Bulldog?
Not a fan at all.
Yeah, I'm not really
either. I don't think it deserves to be on the list.
No. Oh. Yeah. Very similar again. So there must be something about having the squashed face because the Bulldog is number 5. Mm. Then number 6 is the Poodle. Number 7 is the Beagle. Number 8 is the Rottweiler. Number 9, which I was surprised at, is the German Short-Haired Pointer. I don't really see many of that. In Chicago, you see a few, but not loads. And there's been a change in number 10 spot. It used to be the Yorkshire Terrier. Mm. And now, one from your country, Lowry, the Pembroke Welsh Corgi.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And funny enough, when I moved to Chicago, I was like, oh, there's loads of corgis everywhere. But in England, you don't see that many corgis. Considering the Queen's famous for her corgis, you'd think, oh, that will continue down through the country. But we don't, you know, do you see many in Wales?
Yeah. I'd say so. I wouldn't say it's a hugely common dog, but it may be something to do with the England-Wales rivalry that you're refusing to have the Pembrokeshire Corgi.
Yeah, and the Queen just does it to do like, I'll keep the Welsh happy, we'll get a Pembroke Corgi.
Yeah, it's her only thing she does for Wales.
So that is the top 10 dog breeds for this year. Any surprises or did you think, yeah, I can go imagine that?
I guess I'm surprised there's not more smaller breeds like Maltese, I would think would be on there, or a Bichon Frise.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that.
More toy dogs. They seem to be leaning towards larger or mid-size.
They are. I think a Beagle to me is weird too.
Yeah, I think a Beagle's a bit weird. Like, it's not, because they're really hard to train Beagles, and you've got to be quite a
stubborn little thing.
Yeah, you've got to be quite an experienced dog owner. I think people think, oh, they're so cute because you see them a lot on. They're your stereotypical dogs you draw when you're younger. You think, oh, that's, if you imagine a dog,
yes, that's,
how you imagine it. And Poodle, they haven't stated if it's a standard, miniature, or
I'm surprised a Spaniel isn't on there.
The Cock Spaniel, yeah. Or any sort of Spaniel.
Any sort of Spaniel.
Yeah. Okay then, well that's interesting. Dogs in the News. In this week's Dog in the Spotlight, we'll be looking at the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. Now, I've had many requests to look at this dog breed by my friend John and Carly, and also I'm a primary school teacher, and I said to the children, if there's any dog breeds you want me to do a podcast on, let me know. And this request was done by Tara.
Oh, hello, Tara.
All right, now, the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, you cannot talk about the King Charles, the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel without talking about the King Charles Spaniel, because they're very, very closely related and their history is combined. Now, just by the name King Charles Spaniel, the history has a lot of royalty and nobility British members that have sort of made the breed, adapted the breed, made the breed popular.
Okay.
So, ready for a history lesson?
About the royalty, we are ready, aren't we, American
Trevor? Yes, we are. Edge of our seat.
Mm-hmm. On the edge of your seat about royalty and dogs. So, it was the toy spaniel which was first recorded in the 15th century, and it appeared in portraits and was recorded that Queen Mary I of England had one, and Mary Queen of Scots. And this is a really interesting story with Mary Queen of Scots. When she was beheaded by her cousin, Queen Elizabeth I, as she went to the gallows, she had her faithful toy spaniel in her large dress. In the Tudor times, they had those large dresses.
Very large dress.
Say again?
Very large dress.
A very large dress.
A full-grown dog.
These dogs are quite small. They're very small companion dogs. Anyway, when she was beheaded, after her, obviously the head was chopped off, the spaniel came out from underneath her dress, which was like, after you've seen this body, they saw a little movement, and it was a little spaniel
coming
out.
It's a bit depressing.
At least it didn't kill the dog.
That's something.
Anyway, so it was very popular through nobility and royalty all throughout Europe, and they were known as a companion dog or comforter. And what was interesting about these dogs, as well as being a companion dog and a comforter, they used to take them to bed, like sleep with them in their bed. And the reason why they did that is because they wanted insects and fleas to go towards the dog and not bite the owner. So they were sort of like a flea repellent of the day, which I thought was a bit of interesting, initiative. So how did it get its name, King Charles Spaniel? Now, it was the King Charles II who really was an advocate of this breed and promoted the breed and made the breed popular across Europe. And that's its namesake, King Charles Spaniel. It's continued to be popular throughout the centuries with nobility and royalty. And then it suddenly had a physical change. And that was when William III and Mary II introduced the pug and the Japanese chin from Asia. And they crossbred the toy spaniel with these two dogs. And that's what we have today. The King Charles Spaniel has that squash nose, slightly bulbous eyes. And because of this sort of interbreeding with these other two breeds.
Is that a purposeful move? That seems like an odd mix.
I don't know if it was a purposeful move. I mean, the move stuck and that's what their look comes from. And consider it was popular at the time. I don't know why they added the pug and the Japanese chin in to make it a bit different. But yeah, so the look changed. This was about the 17th or 18th century. Just to note that the King Charles Spaniel is known, the King Charles Spaniel is known in Britain as the King Charles Spaniel, but it's also referred by the American Kennel Club as the English Toy Spaniel. So they're the same breed. They're just a different name in the two different countries. There's another royal connection here. There are four colours. And there's the black and tan, and that's known as the King James. Okay. Then there's the tricolour, which is black, ruby and white, and that is known as the Prince Charles. Then there is the red and white, and that's known as the Blenheim. And the reason why it's called the Blenheim is because John Churchill, the first Duke of Marlborough, who lived in Blenheim Palace, developed the colouring of having a red and white King Charles Spaniel. And that's why, and they called it the Blenheim. So that's why it's called the Blenheim. And then you've got the all red, which is known as the Ruby. But on another note, John Churchill is Winston Churchill's ancestor. So again, there's that nobility side of them. And
it's a very noble breed.
A noble breed.
Classy dog.
Which one of those four is the most popular?
So the most popular is the Blenheim. Red and white.
Yes, that's what I think quintessential.
Yeah. And the least popular one is actually the King James, the black and tan. This is true, you don't see as many.
Yeah.
However, a king got involved again with this breed. That is the breed for them. It's a real popular one. So in 1903, the UK Kennel Club said, they attempted to have the four colours split into three different dog breeds. So the black and tan, the King James would have been a breed. The tricolour, the Prince Charles would have been a breed. And they would have had the Blenheim and the Ruby as another breed. And there was controversy saying, no, they should be one breed. And then it was Edward VII stepped in and said, actually, can we just stick with one breed, the King Charles Spaniel? I don't know why he got so sort of involved in it, but
I feel like there's bigger things going on. Was,
yeah. Like, really? Can we just calm down here? But yeah, so he got involved there. And another story involving the King Charles Spaniel and royalty, as I said before, it's a very popular breed in with royalties. Queen Victoria had one. But one which is quite a sad story is Anastasia, the Romanov family, the Tsars of Russia. They owned a King Charles Spaniel. And when they were killed, the night they were killed, when they were taken down to the basement in July 1918, they brought down their, because they thought they were leaving, they brought down their King Charles Spaniel, and that was shot and killed with the family, which is quite a sad story.
That's a terrible, very depressing story.
Actually. That is a story. Yeah, it's quite a depressing story, but I thought it was quite
beheadings, and now we've got dogs being shot.
They always seem to be around dying monarchies. I don't know why. Monarchs, sorry. Anyway. So that was a long history of the King Charles Spaniel. And you're saying, well, this podcast is on the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. Now, the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel is quite a new breed as such. And the way it came about was a competition. So in 1926, an American, Roswell Elridge, held a competition for breeders to selectively breed a dog that that looked like the dog that was in the pictures of Charles II, the original toy spaniel.
So those had kind of died out then?
They near enough died out because of the pug and the Japanese chin changing that physical look. They wanted to go, let's go back, take away the features that the pug and the Japanese chin brought to it and have the original toy spaniel. So breeders got together and they created, through selective breeding, the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
Would it technically be pedigree then or no?
At the start, it wouldn't have been a pedigree until the Kennel Club. It's been around long enough. They've had a line of them which have the similar features, etc.
Do we know what breeds they bred into to get the longer snout?
I tried to research that, and I think they brought in the Cocker Spaniel.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But I don't know the other ones they brought in. The difference are the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel is the larger of the dogs, and it has a longer snout and less bulbous eyes. I think it's more of a better looking dog and a dog that sort of probably appeals to more people than
the Japanese chin is not a pretty breed.
And it wasn't recognized, so the Cavalier became recognized by the Kennel Club in 1945, and it wasn't till 1997 in America it was recognized as a pedigree breed. Again, it had the royal connections. Princess Margaret had one. And even though Queen Elizabeth II has her corgis, she also had one. They come under the toy group, and the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel was the largest of the toy group. Now, as we said to you before, they're companion dogs. They have become so popular in over the years, and the reason is because of their temperament. They are such a stable, reliable dog with adults, elderly, children. They're the sort of dog you think, you imagine your family pet that fits the bill in everything, the right size, it's not shedding, it doesn't molt, it's not a great barker. But a bit like we were talking about the Cocker Spaniel in a few episodes ago, they love human companionship. They have that companionship dog in them, the comforters. So they do crave human companionship. So it's not probably a dog you could leave for a long time because, like the Cocker Spaniel, it gets depressed and lonely. But as a dog with its temperament is outstanding, and it's actually in the UK one of the most popular choices for a therapy dog, a school therapy dog, a hospital therapy dog.
Yeah, I would say with all the breeds that I work with, this is one breed that is always happy, even at the vet clinic. They're lovely little dogs. They're always happy. They're always wagging their tails. I don't think that I could recall a single Cavalier King Charles Spaniel that had a bad temperament.
They are. And so when it comes to training, which coincides with the temperament, they like positive praise. And according to Stanley Coren, I looked at both breeds. So I looked at the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and I looked at the King Charles Spaniel. And considering they're so closely related, they're like half brothers, there's a slight distance between intelligence. One is more intelligent than the other. So as we've said, we probably all think the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel is probably the better looking of the dog.
Yes.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah, I would, more appealing. So one of the breeds is at 73rd most intelligent dog, and the other breed is at the 80th. So we look at looks. Does the good looking one is not the bright one, or is the King Charles Spaniel really unfortunate as being ugly as well as dumb? I'm just saying that. Some people think that breed is gorgeous, the King Charles Spaniel, but who do you think's the brightest?
I think that the Cavalier will be the brightest, just because I think maybe the interbreeding of the King Charles may have affected its intelligence somewhat.
You don't think the Japanese Chin and the Pug are very intelligent?
I don't know a lot about them, but from my perception, no.
Yeah, not a lot of room in those little scrunched faces for brains.
Yeah,
I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to say that there's no way that they have both beauty and intelligence.
Like you, Trevor.
Thank you.
No one can be like you.
Oh, so.
Sweating.
You're right. The Cavalier is lucky. It has beauty and brains.
Oh,
look at that. The poor unicorn.
King Charles Spaniel. It's the oldest breed, and it hasn't really developed any intelligence from all those years of breeding. Now, popularity. We talked about in Dog in the News is the top 10. There's a huge difference. So when I spoke to Trevor about the dog breeds we're doing, you just assumed it was just one dog breed. You didn't know there were two.
Yes, thank you for calling me out there. Yes.
Yeah, and he is a vet, so if you've got... Yes. I'd be a bit worried about taking your dog. He doesn't even know what the dog breeds are.
I've seen the ones that are scrunched nose. I just... And then I've seen, obviously, the ones with the longer nose, which would be the true Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, as I've learned today. I guess I just didn't realize that there were two separate lineages. I just thought that someone had gotten a little Cavalier with the breeding.
Oh.
My nurses love that one.
Oh. Yeah, I can tell. Wow. That's a slick one there. A
very slick one, got that in. So, in the United States, the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, considering it's just recognised as a breed in 1997, it's the 18th most popular breed out of 195 dog breeds. And the King Charles Spaniel is right down at the bottom of the list at 135th.
Wow.
And by the way, that was called the English Toy Spaniel. So if you're looking at that trying to of my facts, it's the English Toy Spaniel.
Now, when I think of a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, I think a lot of them being high contenders in crufts and winners in crufts. I see them trotting around. Is that because they're easy to train, or?
I think any dog, because they are popular, and I think any dog that's popular tends to appear in the dog shows because there's more people out there breeding them. I guess.
And they're very pretty.
Yeah, they're very pretty. It's funny, I was saying my sister was going to do this one. She said, oh, they remind me of an old lady's dog. But because they're so easy and they don't need loads of exercise and they just like their companion, they're very laid back, they're not barkers, they are the ideal dog for the elderly. And the ideal dog, as we always talk about, apartment living, etc. These can live anywhere. They could live in the on a farm, live in a house in the country, or they can live in an apartment. Their coat does need regular grooming because it can mat, because it's like a fine silky fur. But again, they're not huge shedders in any shape or form. Now, we've looked at the history, we've looked at the temperament, and you're thinking, this is the ideal dog. This is the best dog in the world. And there's one big flaw you really need to look at when looking at this dog breed. And this is my friend John, who's been going through dog breeds, and he was saying, this is the dog. However, this is what's really putting us off this dog. And Trevor, when I mentioned the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, literally just said they have got a lot of health problems.
Yeah, I was about to say, not so fast, George.
Yeah. So this is going to be quite a big segment on health problems, because they do have many health problems. So over to Trevor and tell us how often you're seeing these dogs and what are you seeing them for?
Yeah, so I would say that you can't talk about the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and health issues unless we sort of address kind of two major disease processes that they get. So I'm a veterinary cardiologist, and so this is probably the most common breed that I see in practice, and that's because they get a disease process known as degenerative valve disease. In the human medicine, the equivalent would be similar to mitral valve prolapse. And so essentially, because of age-related changes in genetics to the valve that separates the top and bottom chambers on the left side of the heart, that's the mitral valve, they develop a leak. And I think the statistics are that by the age of 10, 100% of this breed will have a murmur because of this leaky valve. That doesn't mean that they all go on to develop heart failure, which is sort of one of the you know, closer to end stages of the disease process, but 100% of them will develop a murmur from this process. And this is the most common acquired heart disease in dog breeds in general. But in the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, they also seem to progress much quicker than other breeds. So I would say that is probably, being very biased as a cardiologist, that is what I think of when I see the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. They are the poster child for this disease process. The other big one would be, it has lots of different names, but Chiari-like malformation. And so this is sort of a neurologic, well, it's not sort of, it is a neurologic musculoskeletal disease that is very common in the breed. I was doing a little bit of research on it, talking to some friends who are neurologists, and it's about 90% of them will have this to some degree. They're not all clinical for it, but it just has to do with malformation of sort of the cranium, so the bones of the skull, and then the exit point for your spinal cord. And what happens in these dogs is that the area where the spinal cord and the brainstem exit your skull is just not formed appropriately. And so it causes certain degrees of compression. And so what's really difficult about this disease process is that it sort of mimics a lot of other diseases. So dogs will present middle-aged with signs of scratching. So one of the most common signs is what we call phantom scratching, where these dogs will sort of paw at their ear, paw at their shoulders, and it gets confused with dermatological disease processes. And then also phantom vocalization. So owners will report dogs waking up in the middle of the night just vocalizing. And it's a neurological process that's causing compression of the spinal cord.
When you're looking to adopt a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, is there a way to anticipate the degree that they will have this, or is it just a wait and see situation?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So speaking specifically to the valve disease, so degenerative valve disease, that's an acquired condition. And so if you were to do echocardiograms on young dogs, it's something that you wouldn't see. It's something that will develop later in life. As far as the Chiari-like malformation and the association of a disease process called syringomyelia, which is common with that, that is also something that presents sort of later in life, so 3 to 6 years of age. And that, unfortunately, is something that is diagnosed with an MRI. So you would have to get, you know, your puppy MRI to see if there's a malformation of the cranium. So,
oh, okay.
With the heart condition, you were saying, how do owners know that? Why would they come to the vet with that concern? How's it shown in the dog before it's diagnosed?
Yeah, oftentimes it's diagnosed before the dogs are clinical. So if you're taking your dog in and getting regular veterinary care, your veterinarian will be listening with a stethoscope and they'll pick up on a murmur. And that's sort of the first stage. And then from that point, they may recommend taking some chest x-rays to look at the size of the heart. And depending on sort of your level of care and whether or not you're the type of owner that seeks specialist care, once the murmur is heard, then the dogs will get referred over to a veterinary cardiologist who will do an echocardiogram. And that's the sort of definitive way to diagnose where is the murmur coming from, how bad is the leak, and is there associated enlargements of your heart associated with that leak.
So the life expectancy of the King Charles Spaniel is 9 to 15. And so it's quite a large gap, you know, given of a life expectancy. With these conditions, do they drastically reduce their life expectancy? Say they've got heart murmur, what would be the situation there?
Yeah, so for the Chiari-like malformation, it's also highly variable. So there's lots of different clinical signs, as I was saying, some as minor as just having these phantom vocalizations or phantom scratching. There's other dogs that can have severe malformations that lead to tetraparesis, so sort of weakness of all of your legs. And so it just kind of depends. There's also associated with the Chiari-like malformation, some of them will develop pretty severe levels of neuropathic pain that needs to be treated with medications and such. As far as the valve disease goes, as I said, 100% of them by the age of 10 will develop a murmur, but that doesn't mean that they will all become clinical for their heart disease. But as a breed, they will progress faster with their leaky valve than other dog breeds that get the same condition. And if you're a dog that presents at 7 years of age and you have a substantial leak across that valve and heart enlargement, you are a dog that will likely have a shortened life expectancy because your heart will start to fail over time. And that's highly variable. So some dogs will have a giant leak and they will live 3 more years with an enlarged heart. You'll have other dogs that we're checking yearly for the next 7 years and they never go to heart failure.
Okay. And both medical conditions happen in the King Charles Spaniel as and the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel?
Yeah, I would say, since you called me out earlier, I don't know that I ever recognized the difference between the two. I do know that because I researched that
part. So they do happen in both dog breeds.
I think that was a double dig.
Yeah, it just keeps going.
I just wanted to get you out there, Trevor.
Yeah.
And I think also, especially being in America, and even in England, veterinary bills, a big thing that I think you said when I said about the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, the first thing you said is you've got to have a big bank account with these illnesses. Is it an expensive, not to buy, but to sort of maintain and look after? Would you say it's an expensive breed?
I would say it's an expensive breed. Yep. And so if you are, if you're getting one of these dogs, it's some insurance is something that I would look into for this dog breed. Whereas I may not have said that, like for, you know, like the Rhodesian Ridgeback we talked about last week. This breed is something that I anticipate you will have problems with at some point. Lovely breed. Unfortunately, they didn't get it all. So beauty, brains, and poor health.
Had to fail on one couch.
Had to fail on one. Can have them all. So thank you for that, Trevor. That was a really interesting point about the health. And actually definitely one to consider if you're considering this dog breed. So one of our favourite parts of the show. But before we do our favourite part of the show, which is the top names, we are going to do, I didn't realise that countries have national dogs. I had no idea about this. And my friend James McGarrigle mentioned this and I said, I'll put this as a little segment into the show. So I'm going to name three countries and you're going to have to guess what is the national dog breed of that country.
Right. Oh God.
So there is China, France and Germany. You get one guess for each country. So first one, China, Lowry.
Don't say the Japanese chin.
No.
Okay, good.
I don't know that I know the names of enough dog breeds for China, but is there one called the Chinese... It begins with P.
I was thinking Chinese Crested. That was going to be
Chinese
mine.
The Chinese Crested.
That was stolen.
Oh, the Chinese Crested. That's really unusual. That's the one with no hair.
Yes, and they have little sprouts. Yes.
Yeah, and actually they do have what they call a puff.
Right.
The Pekingese.
You didn't even give me a chance to guess.
Oh, I thought you said the Chinese Crested.
Oh, I had a backup.
Oh, no, you've had your backup.
I was going to say that one.
Oh, was it, Trevor?
What was it again, George?
The Pekingese.
Yeah.
And the next one was France.
A dog du Bordeaux?
Okay.
Oh, I don't know.
I think there's more than one.
I didn't even know there was even one. There is only just one official.
Is it King Charles?
Okay, the breed that's been through all British royalty. I can see why the French would choose that as their national dog. No, Lowry, it is the poodle.
Oh.
And the last one, Germany.
Dachshund.
I'll go with the German Shepherd.
So I would have thought the German Shepherd.
Well, oh.
It is actually the Great Dane.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
I would have thought that was Danish.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
They really have thrown us with these names.
I would like to hear your sources. What are your sources?
So, the top name for the King Charles Spaniel, the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, King Charles Spaniel. So, if you had one,
okay.
Firstly, Lowry, what colour would you go for and name?
I would go for the Blenheim.
So, the red and white?
Mm-hmm. Basic, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I would name them Minnie.
Okay, Minnie. And if it was a boy?
Mickey.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think about this beforehand.
No, I can tell. Trevor, what colour and which one?
I would go with a ruby, and I think the male would be Winston.
Oh, I like it.
I would have said William, but I feel like that would be probably, it would be too common.
Yeah.
Almost as common as Charles, I guess.
Yeah.
And then for the female, I would say probably Victoria.
Oh, I like
those
ones.
Vicky.
Not Vicky.
Vicky.
Victoria.
Is Vicky back?
I don't think it's harsh and fat, is it? Anyway, so the male top male names are, surprisingly, number one is Charlie, Henry, and Buster. It's quite cute, Buster. And then females are Phoebe, Sophie, and Ruby.
All very quintessentially British.
Two of my nieces are Sophie and Ruby. They do not look like a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, I'd just like to add.
Like very... very London kind of prim and proper British names.
I would call, if I was a male one, Toby, I think it's quite cute. Toby. And for a girl, I think I would go, I like Victoria. It's something regal. Victoria.
Vic?
No, I would go Vic though. I'd have to call it Victoria.
Mm. Yeah.
So celebrities which have had Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. You've had Ronald Reagan. Courtney Cox, she had Harley and Hooper. Terry Hatcher, Frank Sinatra. Jennifer Love Hewitt had Charlie, original. Liv Tyler had Nell, Lauren Bacall, and Henry Winkler.
Good.
These are a lot more famous than the owners of Rhodesian Ridgebacks that you sprung on us last week.
Who is that man?
Anyway, that is an insight into the lovely breed of the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. And the last question I ask every week is, Lowry, would the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel be the dog for you, and why or why not?
Well, hold on to your hats, because I know I've said no for how many weeks in a row?
Well, you've just
said
what
episode is this?
This is the fifth, but you always say, or sixth, you always say why, like your circumstances, but yeah.
Yes, this might be on my list. I'm not committing to it because of Trevor's segment. It seems to be...
Well, at least you know a cardiologist.
Well, there we go. I'd be really milking
free
that.
Healthcare.
Seems like an absolutely lovely dog. And this is one I would look into. Although the health issues are slightly concerning, I don't find it completely off-putting. So it might just be somewhere on my list.
Good. And Trevor, what about yourself?
They're very... vocal breed, and I don't deal with dogs that yip and bark.
That's really interesting,
because I'm not so into smaller dogs, so I'm gonna say this is not the breed for me.
Because when I read about the vocal, they're not majorly vocal, so maybe it's...
I would say it's 50-50. You're right, there's definitely some that are not, they're not vocal, but there are others that just bark and yip and bark constantly.
But do you think that's when you're seeing them, they've got the neurology issues?
I think so. Those are more owners report dogs waking up in the middle of the night and vocalizing, more like random vocalizations. I'm talking specifically tail wagging, looking at you, yipping. Yeah. So, but I would say you're probably, I mean, there's very variability in all the breeds, and I would say, yeah, I'd say half of them
probably.
It's
a risky dog, this one, isn't it? It's like a gambler's dog.
I know, you think it sounds like it's from the surface, you think, wow, and then you're just digging home.
Don't know
like,
what
oh,
you're going to get with one of these.
It was a surprise. Anyway, thanks again. Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you.
And thank you, Lowry.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.